download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And good evening. I am not Kevin Tachi. I'm Christine James, sitting in studio here with Kevin Tachi, because tonight we are hosting another political forum. It is the 5th Plymouth District. That's Norwell, Rockland, and Hanover. Kevin's asking me questions here along with Charles Mathewson. Now, here's what's happening. It's a WATD political forum. The two Republicans vying for the November ballot are Dave DeCoste of Norwell and Lou Valenzuela of Rockland, both hoping to unseat the incumbent Democrat Rhonda Nyman of Hanover in the general election this fall. As we mentioned before, asking questions with me tonight are Kevin Tachi. He's the host of Monday Night Talk you've been listening to, and WATD's own Charles Mathewson. Our format is very simple. We try to keep it the same way every time. We ask the candidates to have opening and closing statements prepared. In between, we ask a round of questions, including the lightning round, where the answers are either yes or no, or one or two sentences tops, and we'll tell the candidates what we would like. Now, if we have time, which I believe we will tonight, we also give the candidates a chance to ask each other a couple questions to each other. Now, we chose the order earlier out of the official newsroom koozie stand-in, and again, we're still conducting the investigation of where the official newsroom koozie is.
We will find it.
Where is Bernstein and Woodward when you really need them?
I know, to find the official newsroom koozie that I've used for years. Maybe it was a disgruntled candidate. I don't know.
It had to have been.
I know. But I will find the perpetrator, Charles, and I will get the koozie back. Meanwhile, Dave DeCoste drew first and then Lou Valenzuela, but Lou is running a little bit late anyway, so we're going to begin with Dave DeCoste. And Dave, you have 2 minutes to tell our listeners all about who you are. Dave, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, first of all, Christine, Kevin, Charles, thank you for your time, and also thanks to the management of WATD for sponsoring the forum. Tonight, I'm asking the voters of the 5th Plymouth District for the opportunity to be a representative in the general court. As someone who was brought up here, attended the school system from kindergarten through my graduation in 1981, and whose family has occupied the same home for over 4 decades, I bring with me a familiarity with the district that includes an appreciation for its history and a long-term commitment to its well-being. As a graduate of Northeastern University with undergraduate degrees in accounting and finance, along with a graduate degree in financial economics from Boss University, I now teach both finance and risk management at that university, I have a good grounding to understand and act upon the financial challenges the Commonwealth faces. With military service spanning 29 years as both an enlisted man and an officer, I have a unique background to understand the challenges faced by veterans, young and old. I currently own and operate several realty trusts, and I am involved in the management of several others. I'm the only candidate in the race who has owned and run a business, and as a member of the National Federation of Independent Businessmen, I will actively work to promote and protect the right of everyone in business to own and operate and grow their business with a minimum of interference from state government. I hope all of you will favorably consider my candidacy, and if elected, I will guarantee that I will be a representative who is able to put in the necessary time and effort to resolve complex problems facing the Commonwealth, who will operate free from any business constraints or conflicts of interest. I'll be a representative who will not treat the position as an opportunity for personal enrichment of any kind. And I'll be a representative whose focus will be on the good of the Commonwealth and the public interest, not self-interest.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Dave DeCoste. Now, Lou Valenzuela, good to see you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thank you. You move very quickly.
He's a track star.
I believe it. And you have 2 minutes for an opening statement. Can be as short as you want, but please no longer than 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Good evening to everyone in WATD land. I hope everyone has had a great Labor Day weekend. I want to thank WATD for hosting this forum and allowing us to discuss the issues important to the voters and our families. My name is Lou Valenzuela. I'm running for state rep, 5th Plymouth District. I'm from Rockland, married, have 2 adult children. I graduated from Bentley University with a degree in accounting. I have 30 years of private sector accounting experience and a controller for the past 19 years. I was also a selectman for 6 years and on the cable committee, crossing guard committee. I coach Little League, Girls Basketball League. Currently, I am a member of the Lions and treasurer of the Rockland Republican Town Committee. I've been very involved in the community for over 20 years. I am running because I want to join leaders like Jeff Deal and Sean O'Connell, both of whom stood up for the taxpayers. I want to stop the wave of illegal immigration into Massachusetts. We also need to lower our tax burden, bring good jobs back to the state. Being a father, seeing firsthand that the only guarantee when our kids graduate are student loans. I am endorsed by the gas tax group. I am the only candidate here that worked to get signatures on the ballot to get the repeal in November. We also need to insist on accountability. As we saw with the many scandals up on Beacon Hill, the incumbent has sat silently by while Olga Roche lost track of children under her watch. While some called for a resignation, the incumbent didn't. I called for a resignation back in February. We also had New England Compounding Center where over 60 people died. We had Annie Duke and the chemist who fudged lab results and had convicted felons set free. We also saw the current speaker was called an undecided conspirator. So you can see there's a whole host of issues, and due to the one-party rule, there was no accountability up there. As an accountant, as a finance person, I want to bring accountability. In my experience, I think we'll bring that. Thank you.
Thank you. That was an opening statement. Lou Valenzuela tonight, 5th Plymouth District, Hanover, Norwell, and Rockland. I'm going to open our questions now with the host of Monday Night Talk, and that's Kevin Tonchi. Kevin.
Thank you, Christine. First question we'll put to Lou. Lou, I got to ask you, why do you think that your background in accounting would be an asset at the State House?
That's easy. As we see, people, the politicians up at the State House, one thing is I've gone door to door that's resonated with people. I always tell them I'm an accountant first, not a politician, so don't hold that against me. They spend our money first, and then they ask, you know, how are we going to pay for it after? I have 30 years of budgeting experience in the private sector. Anybody that's worked for the private sector knows this. Dave's mentioned accountability. We wouldn't last 10 minutes in the private sector if we weren't producing. So that experience will go up there. Right now, we have a surplus for 3 years in a row. I want to see our tax burden lowered. Some of that money should go back to the cities and towns in the form of local aid. In our own town, we've had 5 overrides over the past couple of years, which I was against because it was mainly because of the local aid wasn't keeping up with the state budget. We call these the Nyman overrides. I think this experience is something that's needed up on Beacon Hill. There's only one state rep now that has the accounting and finance background. I'm also a family guy, middle-class family. I understand the struggles that a lot of middle-class people are enduring these days. We're trying to make ends meet and so on and so forth. So I can relate to them more with having a family and knowing what, you know, a lot of middle-class people are going through.
Thank you. A question for
Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, I would ask you, would it be accurate to say that you consider yourself a Reagan Republican?
I do consider myself a Reagan Republican. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you would, for our listeners, define what that means, and also how does that make you more electable than your primary opponent?
Well, I'm not sure my primary opponent wouldn't consider himself a Reagan Republican, so I wouldn't say that would be something he'd reject. You want to comment on that, Lou? But I would say that I represent the kind of optimistic conservatism that President Reagan embodied, and specifically the focus on growing the economy and lowering taxes so that individual businessmen, individual families can formulate the capital and develop with their own priorities along the economy, along the course that they want to take. Unguided and unfettered by, as much as we can, by government bureaucrats.
And Lou, so, do you want to just chime in there, Reagan Republican?
Oh, that's an easy one. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, Reagan's one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. He inherited a situation far worse than what the current occupant inherited. Never blamed the prior occupant of the White House. He lowered the cost of doing business, the burden on businesses, brought good jobs back to this country, and basically saved this country. I think all too often, government thinks they're the answer. As we're seeing, they're not. Big government is not the answer. When big government gets involved, we all lose. Whether it's taxes, regulations, which amounts to a hidden tax, we all lose. I think Ronald Reagan was a great president, and I think, you know, that's something we should all emulate. I think what's happened with the Republican Party over the past few years is we've drifted towards the middle. We've almost become apologetic for being a conservative, and we shouldn't be.
Thank you very much. That's Lou Valenzuela. Now, Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates tonight.
Let's go to David DeCoste first. I'm going to run some numbers. This election, 160 seats will be determined in the House. Of those, 87 have no Republican nominee. Only 10 of the remaining 78 seats are contested, and of those, 4 are open. So only 6 of 160 seats is a Republican challenging an incumbent Democrat. This is one of them. What makes you one of these few? What do you think makes Rhonda Nyman vulnerable? Dave?
Well, all right, a couple of reasons. And number one, I'll answer that, why Rhonda's vulnerable and why I think I can win. First of all, this is probably, by most measures, fourth, fifth, sixth most Republican district in the state. It is probably the most Republican district represented by a Democrat. The numbers, to give you some numbers, during the Brown-Warren race, Senator Brown carried Norwell with 66% of the vote, Hanover with 67%, Rockland with 57%. This is clearly a district where most of the people are working, and most of the people, I believe, fall on the Republican side, that is the more conservative, and they're not necessarily Republicans, keep in mind. And in fact, in my experiences, the more conservative people are in fact independents, because they tend to be frustrated with both parties. I know most of the people on my committee, and most of the larger donors, in fact, are independents, not Republicans. But in fact, the district itself is conservative. Now, why can I win? Well, I can give you just my results from Norwell. I carried Norwell with the two most Democratic districts with over 60% of the vote. I defeated a three-term incumbent with over 58% of the vote. I was able to go, and this is a four-term incumbent, and I was able to very quickly put together a fairly large committee to help my run on fairly short notice. And I think that in the long run, I have the ability. I've won my last election. I'm getting strong support across all three districts. I'm already picking up that perhaps our Democrat opponent is not as strong as she once was, and there's a great degree of frustration. I can tell you that, you know, in Norwell, the largest issue there is a frustration with 40B, among other things. In Rockland, it seems to be illegal immigration comes up. And in Hanover, I hear a lot about the qualifications for the job and the votes right across the line that the current incumbent is taking. So there's a huge degree of dissatisfaction within the district.
Okay, Lou, what makes you think you can beat Rhonda Nyman?
Well, I agree with Dave. This is a very conservative district out of the whole state. And as we've seen with the incumbent now, she votes with the speaker about 96% of the time, has instituted the largest tax increase last year that we saw. One of the reasons I feel I can win is, even though Dave may have won his last election, I won two elections in the town of Rockland. Out of the three towns, it's probably the most blue-collar, union type of town, and I won because I was honest and upfront with people. I told them like it was. I like to try to preserve jobs without having to raise taxes, and we did so, and I got reelected in 2005, and that is one of the bigger districts in the three towns. So it's going to be important to win that town. I think I still have a lot of support going door to door. A lot of people still support my effort, and in that town, one of the biggest issues coming up now happens to be the air base. If anyone's followed that, there's new legislation was passed. Starwood Development's going to take it over. I was on the board.
But Lou, how is Rhonda vulnerable?
How she? When she got in, she basically got an appointment. She ran on her husband's name. She's been running on the name ever since. I talked to a lot of people, and even though they might have her signs up, once I go through some of the issues with them, as far as the high tax burden, as far as the immigration problem, as far as the health care issues, we had a health care website that was functioning. We spent $3.5 million. That's what the federal health care website was modeled after. They didn't vote to grant a waiver or go for a waiver, and now it's going to cost us up to $500 million. I think a lot of people now look at her. She has a record that she votes with the speaker. We need someone up there that's going to think on their own. It's not just going to go along with the party line. And I'm not going to go along with that.
Okay.
Kevin Tachi, question for the candidates.
Lou, there's an ongoing battle with the minority leadership in the House. If you were elected, how would you approach the situation as a freshman legislator?
I'd like to say I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. I know there's a lot of issues, not just with the state. Also goes on at the federal level. unfortunately, I think sometimes the worst enemy of Republicans is not Democrats, it's other Republicans, and we have to work together. We got to find common ground, and that is not to alienate a fellow Republican. So I would work with anybody up there. I'd rather work with someone like Brad Jones up there. And you know, try to see what we could do. But you know what? At this point, I'd wait until I got in there. I know, you know, he's made some comments about conservatives and Tea Party people in particular. I haven't been too crazy about, but I'm going to worry about getting elected first.
Okay. Same question for you, Dave, about the ongoing battle with the minority leadership in the House. If you're elected, how do you approach the situation as a freshman legislator?
Well, if I'm elected, I approach it then. I think Lou is incorrect. There's first of all, there's nothing gained in choosing sides right now. I mean, if this were 1976, then I would have told you I would have gone for Reagan over Ford, but it's not. And I don't think the lines are that cut that clearly. You know, and I'm no stranger at taking, you know, I have been a Republican, an active Republican, literally since the time I walked up in 1976 collecting signatures for Governor Reagan, right through Avi Nelson and Ray Shamey and Jack Sullivan and Jack Conway, and right up through the D.A. Sullivan for his senatorial race. I'm not afraid to take sides. Just in this case, I don't think there's anything to be gained of taking sides. And frankly, I'd like to sit down and talk to these people in person once I'm there. Because one thing I've discovered with the military is that until you get the full story, it's not a good idea to come to a conclusion.
Just a quick follow-up. Would you feel, depending on who your association with certain Republicans in the House, might automatically make you killed by association?
Well, you see, I'm not sure who I'm associated with.
It's the same question I'm going to ask Lou in a moment, but I want to give you a chance to answer.
I'll tell you what. I know of Representative Harrington, who is up in the Groton Air area. She's terrific. Representative Hunt, you know, down in the Cape, very smart. He's a CPA Lou referred to. I've contributed to his campaign. I've contributed to Sean O'Connell's campaign. I've contributed to Jeff Perry when he ran, and I take advice, you know, from all of those people. So I am in the mode that we need to focus to make Republican a district that is one of the most Republican districts in the state. That's my goal.
Same with you, Lou. Is it guilt by association?
I don't look at it that way. Okay. We got to bring the party together.
You don't have to look at it that way, but how would others perceive it, though, if you're hanging with a certain group of Republicans who might be perceived as the outsiders to the to, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, at this point, you know, as Dave said, is, you know, we have to get elected first.
Okay.
We have to get the other side of the story. We do work with certain people and understand certain issues. But, you know, at this point, you know, it's really tough to call. You know, you hate to alienate somebody even before you get elected. Sure. And you get up there and, you know, you've already got a history with this person without even talking to them. I don't work that way. In business, in my company, you know, I don't go by hearsay. I don't jump to conclusions. This is why I've been around for as long as I have, doing what I've been doing in my company for 19 years. You got to get up there and you have to get all the facts. And, you know, if we need someone else in there, you know, we do that. But, you know, we got to do what's best for the party at the end of the day. And, okay, you know, let's not jump to conclusions.
Let me just jump in here and ask a quick question. She said, we have to get elected. Well, would be one of you that's going to be elected. As you seem that you think very on a very similar vein on many issues, what is the difference between you guys? Let's start with you, Lou. You and Dave DeCoste, what's the difference?
Other than I think we're both very conservative. I'm a family guy, raised two children. I have two adult children in the household, recently graduated from college, and I understand some of the issues that face, as I mentioned in my opening statement, middle-class families. Also, more importantly, I graduated Bentley College with a degree in accounting, and I've been a practicing accountant, controller for 19 years, budgeting experience, and I think we need that up at the State House now. We need someone that realizes that you can't spend the money and then figure out how to pay for it after.
Right, so you're talking about actual experience rather than philosophical ideas about what kind of a politician you'd be. That's what I'm not clear on. What's really the difference? What would you bring to the table that Dave doesn't have?
Well, I'd be for smaller government. I think when government gets in the way, it hurts everybody. I'd be for less taxes, lowering the tax burden, less regulations. Other than that, you know, I think we need to get up there and get some accountability, too. I've called for Olga Roche to resign. I didn't hear my opponent mention anything about that. I came out in favor of Mark Lombardo's transparency plan. These bills now are just lathered with all kinds of riders and stuff. So I'm proactive. I try to be proactive. And I also can stand up to them. You know, I also did that on my own board. I was a minority on the board of selectmen in my town. Dave, I think in an interview here a couple years ago, didn't take a position on an override in this town. Fairly conservative town, fairly easy position to take. You have to take a stand sometimes. I took tough stands. Anyone that knows me, whether they were for me or against me, would say, we always knew where you were coming from. And, you know, you stood your ground, you worked with people, you didn't compromise your values. And in Rockland, being a blue-collar town, I love the town, don't get me wrong, but you got to be able to work as a minority. And if we go up to the State House, we're still going to be outnumbered, as you mentioned before. There's only 29 state reps there now, Republicans. We're not going to get the majority. We're not even going to get close. Mm-hmm. But you got to be able to work and stand up to them up there because they can be tough. And we've got to be able to do that.
Thanks, Lou. Now, Dave DeCoe, so what makes you different than Lou? He said one of the things he said was you didn't call for the resignation of Olga Roche.
Well, because I don't make meaningless gestures. You know, I could call for Russia to withdraw from the Ukraine. It would have about as much effect. I'm busying myself now going again. I have been actively, in addition to my own campaign, I have been actively supporting several others and assisting several other folks to get on the ballot. So I guess you could say that I am less words, more action. In terms of differences, I don't think Representative DeCoste would vote very differently than Representative Valenzuela. One of my issues in the town of Norwell has been the pension issue. And one of the reasons I'm running is my concern with the solvency of the state. As a matter of fact, if you go to citizensfordecoast.com, you will find several links to Dr. Kotlikoff at BU, Dr. Manel at BC, the website called Pension Tsunami, and they'll all give you an idea of how badly the state is in terms of how our solvency is, our ability to fund future pension debt. Lou mentioned the override. Actually, that's incorrect, Lou. And anybody who asked me privately, you know, I would have told them I very reluctantly supported the override only because I thought we needed more math teachers. I can tell you that that's what that override did. I thought there was a whole lot of fluff, and had I been sitting on the Board of Selectmen at the time, I would have done my best to give the voters an opportunity to vote for a limited override, paying for teachers, and a larger override, which was their only choice that they had to vote take or leave it. But at the time, I did support that override, and my point was I wanted everybody to look at it and make their own decision. But people can look. I have a record of contributions back to the late 80s, and they can get an idea of where I'm not afraid of taking a stand.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates.
Continuing on that idea, Lou, during your time as a Rockland selectman, Rockland voted down override questions and voted out other selectmen who supported them. Norwell, in the district, generally approves overrides. As a strict fiscal conservative, how would you represent your constituencies in these two towns?
Well, Rockland did pass 5 overrides. Our last one did get shot down. As a selectman, the knee-jerk reaction, and it happens all through government, where we need to raise taxes. Like Dave said, he supported an override, you know, whether privately or publicly or whatever. You didn't come out against it. That's fine. That, you know, you're making that statement now. I think a lot of times, as an accountant, I also had cross-accounting experiences. A lot of times you can increase your revenue, but dollar for dollar, it doesn't go to the bottom line. When you cut costs, dollar for dollar, it goes to the bottom line. So I always come out against the override because it's not a solution to the problem. We have enough revenue. In our town, we had more than enough revenue. It was a matter of spending.
Okay, Dave, you're a Norwell selectman.
Yes.
Rockland, also in the district, mm-hmm. is part of the Southfield development. Have you been tracking developments in the development, and do you think the recent organizational changes will work to solve Southfield's problems?
Well, I have always, I can tell you, I am more familiar with a successful turnover, and it really was interesting because what they did up with mass development at Fort Devens has been, I won't say remarkably successful, but it has been far more successful than what we see at the South Weymouth Air Station. And I'm not going to prejudge, to be honest with you. I have not read the specifics of that proposal, but I can tell you that maybe they ought to take a look at how Devens was executed, because Devens, if you go there now, there are factories, there's an operational golf course, they have taken the housing and turned it all over to the private sector. All three towns that are involved on Fort Devens, Lancaster, Ayer, and Harvard, all four towns actually, Shirley, are drawing a significant amount of revenue, and it works. They put together the new underpass under the new interchange under Route 2. Everything is working fine there. The administration of the South Weymouth, and again, this is the type of thing you could probably have a 4-hour program about. But the bottom line is, everyone can agree it's been poorly executed, and it's kind of puzzling why, because we have a situation at Fort Devens that was very well executed. Maybe it's an Army versus the Navy thing. I don't know. As an Army officer, I have a retired Army officer. Maybe I'll point to that.
Lou, do you want to respond?
Well, I was on the Board of Selectmen at the time. I was against the project. I thought it was overreaching. We had failed traffic studies. It called for 2,800 housing units, 7,500 residents. Didn't have the water supply. Certain other issues about the project just didn't sit well with me. We actually wanted to delay our town meeting by 30 days, but again, being outnumbered on the board, sometimes you can't always persuade people to do the right thing. I wanted our attorneys to look at it. Sometimes it's hard to get one town to try to do something, let alone three towns as diverse, especially as Weymouth, Abington, and Rockland were.
Do you think the new reorganization, giving more power to the individual towns, will...
Absolutely.
How much will that help?
Absolutely. You know, now if Rockland wants to keep more open space, they can do that. Weymouth wants to develop more, they can do that. Right now, there's only 500 housing units up there. There's been a lot of state money that's gone into this. And, you know, if it's a project that's worth doing, somebody like Starwood, who came in and took it over, is going to develop this and you know, deal with the three towns, and each town can decide on their own what they want to do with this project. And we actually have the infrastructure. We increase the capacity of our reservoir. We have the sewerage capability. We have the infrastructure there. So if we want to do something there, we can do it. Some people want to keep it as open space. You know, we have that flexibility, but when the three towns are involved, it doesn't work. We also had South Shore Tri-Town Committee. You know, a lot of good people served on that, but this is just an example of bloated government. This is just an example of a corporation that really got in the way of the development. I know a lot of people worked hard on that, but again, it stymied the development. I think Starwood is going to take it to another level. I'm in favor of what's going on now. Okay. I think it needed to happen. It just couldn't sit there. We couldn't hope for the best. It's been going on for 9 years, so...
And Kevin Tauchy, question for the candidates before you jump out of your skin there?
Yeah. All right, we're going with Dave. Dave, the $600 billion transportation bill that was passed during the last legislative session demonstrated the problem with bill bundling. As we saw, the tech tax, we saw cigarette tax, the automatic gas tax were part of that bill that eventually passed. Mm-hmm. What would you do? What would you propose that would stop the bundling of budget amendments so that lawmakers know exactly what they are voting on and passing?
Hold that thought for 1 minute. You're listening to 95.9 FM in Marshfield, WATD, the South Shore's news and information station. This is a political forum. The candidates are the Republicans in the 5th Plymouth District, and that's Hanover, Norwell, and Rockland. Now back to you, Dave DeCost.
All right. You want me to tell you what is going to stop the bundling of bills so that they are covered? Yes. Well, right now,
what would you
now,
propose to try to put an end to something like this?
Well, I thought there were already proposals, but they're not going to be passed. You and I know they're not going to be passed until we at least have the ability. Number one, we're going to need 54 Republicans at least and a Republican governor, so we have the capability to sustain vetoes. All right. So obviously, I would support any legislation that would prevent that. But in fact, until we establish a Republican in the corner office on Beacon Hill and 54 people who, and perhaps close to 50, and we can round up a few stray Democrats to sustain vetoes.
Have you given up on the Senate, or do you include the Senate in that conversation too?
Well, I mean, we've got four. We may, hopefully, we'll pick up Vinny DiMaceto, all right, and maybe a couple of others, Ryan Fatman out west. But right now, again, I think where the game changer could be is potentially in the House. If we picked up, but 54 representatives will really do us not a whole lot of good unless we have a governor that can that is ready and willing to veto bills.
Okay. I agree with Dave. We have to get more numbers up at the State House. That's where I stood with, you know, Mark Lombardo, Sean O'Connell, Jim Lyons, Jeff Daly, a call, and calling for more transparency. Now, the transparency bill is an 8-point plan. First of all, they have to end bundling these amendments. So sometimes legislators say, why did you vote on a bill? Well, because they tossed something to their district. Somebody says, well, if I didn't vote on it, we don't get the money, and then that gets back to me. Stand with any member who wants a roll call vote. That doesn't always happen now. Requiring committee votes to be published online. I mean, it sounds almost foolish when you talk about it, but why not have your votes published online for everybody to see in the age of the computer? Allowing any member access so they can review the latest changes in legislation. I called the incumbent last year when they were debating on the gas tax bill and the tech tax and the cigarette tax bill package, and I had asked her with regard to CPI. There's a provision in there, gas tax goes up by the CPI. Mm-hmm. Will it go down if CPI goes down? And I could hear her shuffling through the papers, and I says, did you even read the bill in light of Nancy Pelosi saying you got to pass it before you know what's in it? Did you even read it? She says, well, we get changes all the time. Well, she voted against a rules change to require a 24-hour recess. Prohibit the passage of spending bills in informal session. Require conference committee meetings to be open to the press and public. Requiring the ethics committee to be bipartisan. You know, a lot of these things go to ethics committee, but it's, you know, just one party rule. You know, what are they going to do? You know, this is what happened with like Olga Roche, DCF, and all these accountability issues. And ending the legislative exemption from the public records law. You know, everything's got to be up front and above board. One of the things that resonated in Rockland with me as a selectman was I was open and transparent government. Whether people were on the left or the right, they want to see what the legislators are doing. If you're proud of it, you know, you should be able to publish it and stand by it. And you know, we don't have that right now. And they know the one-party rule. I agree with Dave. Until we get enough people up there and we get close, because not all Democrats up there are so far to the left that they're not going to go along. And if they start to see a little shift in the tide, if we can gain some seats up there and get close to that veto proof, I think we can make a real big difference.
Okay. Charlie, questions for the candidates?
Affordable housing projects. We've had an impact throughout this district, particularly in Norwell. How should the 40B law be changed? We'll start with Lou because I know that Dave has a lot to say on this.
Well, the 40Bs affected Rockland more than other communities like Norwell and Hanover. I don't like sometimes that the permitting process gets circumvented because somebody's going to allocate a small percentage of affordable housing. So I would be in favor of reforming that law. I do see a need for affordable housing. I don't think that we should have snob laws that keep people out. I mean, you're not talking about Section 8 housing. You're talking about people who, you know, might not be able to afford to live.
I think we can all agree that we want affordable housing, but 40B demonstrably does not create affordable housing. It creates opportunities for developers.
Well, that's what I mean. We do need to reform it. And, you know, I haven't looked at it enough, but I do agree that that's something that we would have to reform and change that. I don't agree that it gives them, like I said before, kind of like a foot in the door to get a development passed because of that.
Do you have any ideas on how to reform it?
No, I don't.
Okay, Dave?
All right, well, this, because I am from Norwell, this is a very big issue in my town.
Simon Hill.
But I can't talk about Simon Hill because it's currently under litigation, right? So let me just talk about poorly conceived 40B developments and specifically how would we address them. I would work with Senator Hedlund, and this is the type of thing that, by the way, cuts across parties, and there are many Democrats with the same concerns that we have. I know up in up in northern Worcester County. They have the same type of things as the town of Groton has gone. Town of Harvard has had to have put up with very similar things, and that's basically in suburban Massachusetts. So what would you do? Number one, you would work with Democrats to make sure that, for instance, environmental concerns can be addressed, and 40B developments can be disapproved on the basis of damage to the environment. And let me give you a very specific example. In Norwell, on Tiffany Road, if you're in Hanover, it's East Street, we had a development, 50-some-odd units, that was approved and went up to the state on appeal. And in that appeal, the engineer for the developer actually testified that the septic system for this development on Tiffany Road would eventually fail, and we would have raw sewage running across Tiffany Road. The state approved it anyway. Believe it or not, they said it would eventually become an issue for the Board of Health. Now, that for other reasons, that project went down the drain. But these are the type of things we need to at the town level. The local municipalities need to be able to address environmental issues. They need to be able to address lack of infrastructure. They need to also be able to. There's a ability to audit each 40B. We need to boost up the ability so the towns can go back and audit the developers to make sure they did not go over the profit limitations that they are allowed to and they are limited on for each of these developments. And if you do that, then I think you will address a large, not all, but a large number of concerns that you hear locally. In Norwell is 37% wetlands. We have a shallow water table. You know, you can't put a 200-unit development with a septic system and expect that at some point is not going to affect our water table. It's not doable.
Let me just jump in here. Another thing that talked about local versus state control has been the question in a number of towns we cover, including Kingston and Plymouth and Scituate, with the wind turbines, with many people who were for the turbines. Then when they actually got put up, the neighbors were really upset, and this has been an ongoing battle in a number of towns. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think should be some of the siting rules? Do you think people on public, private property, what are your thoughts on that, wind turbines in the area towns?
I think it should be left up to the town, unfortunately. You know, the turbines sound like a great idea, but the cost of energy seems to skyrocket when they use these turbines. They are an eyesore. They're a hazard to wildlife, to the birds, and they harm a lot of the wildlife like that. I'd like to see alternative sources of energy. However, wind and solar, I think, only account for about 1.5% of our energy sources. As we saw with down in the Cape Cod, down Woods Hole there, they wanted to put, near Hyannis, they wanted to put all those turbines, but they fought it because they had the money and the political clout that they fought against that. So if it was a viable project, you'd see people putting these all over the state. Unfortunately, you need certain conditions. You know, I did look into this. You know, the wind has to be blowing a certain speed, but it can't be blowing too fast of a speed. So a lot of times I drive by these turbines, that they're not moving. And, you know, you think this is something on a windy day that would be going and producing energy. So,
what about neighbors' concerns? What if neighbors are upset and don't want a turbine? Should they take that into accountability?
They should. They should, okay. Because these are big structures. You know, I mean, we have building, you know, we have zoning laws in the state and in our own towns. And we look at these zoning laws, and you got to go before the zoning board. If you look at these turbines, I mean, they look like a 10-story building. You know, they're very intrusive. You know, it's not like solar panels you can put on the roof of a building, and they're not as intrusive. Plus, they do make some noise when you're near them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. What about you, David Coase? What do you think about the wind turbines?
Well, we've spoken about this before. In some cases, for instance, in Vinyl Haven, Maine, you will find a case where the wind turbine has literally driven people out of their homes in some cases, and has hurt home values. So yes, you have to keep in mind that in most cases the wind, solar just would not exist without subsidies. And I'm not a scientist, and from what I understand, because we are looking at this from green communities, the solar aspect of this seems to be a little bit better. You know, it certainly beats wind on noise. And with the ability to cite, not with green communities, but with the ability to cite, there always should be. You're basically putting an industrial plant into an area, and it's going to be noisy. So yes, of course, local people should be consulted, and they should be, you know, I think decisions should be made on that. But as I said, the Ray Kasparowicz, I spoke to him. He actually did a study on hulls to windmills, and he found that the new one and the old one did have a positive rate of return, but that's in a perfect area. I believe he said one was a little bit above 10%, a little bit below. So it was a positive, investment. But that's in the best place you could do on the South Shore. I think inland, my suspicion is that without subsidies, most of the wind turbines especially, it just don't make sense.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin Tachi. Question for candidates?
Yeah, I think a lot of the concerns with folks these days is as far as when they're out traveling around and our transportation infrastructure. What is your thought on our particular infrastructure here in the Massachusetts? Do you feel that it's being properly funded also? Is enough being done to maintain and repair the state roads and bridges, David?
Is it being properly funded? Oh, boy.
I mean, give me your thought on the state's infrastructure program and your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think that too much money, and again, this kind of boils over to the MBTA and the distribution.
Well, have at it. You have
locally. I have what?
A lot of time.
A minute and 10 seconds. Okay. So we'll talk, but the transportation money at the state level is mal divided, and again, we're not going to get to an honest division or a better division until you change the makeup of Beacon Hill. We need at least a Republican governor. The last transportation bill and the transportation bill they proposed are largely means to backstop shortages in the MBTA pension and also probably hire even more people working for the DOT, and that has been the history of this. So, in fact, until we have an administration that will insist on sensible funding, it is not going to be a case where we're going to be able to see sensible funding. Now, in our own town, I think with the money that we do get and locally, DPW folks do a good job with the local roads, but again, we're building a road. We're floating a bond right now to repave Main Street, and the reason we're doing it is because it takes so long to get state money. There's just be no end. Oh, by the way, there are so many stipulations when you take state money that it's simpler for Norwell to float a bond.
Okay. Question.
Same question for you, Lou.
I agree with Dave. With regards to last year's transportation bill that was passed, we increased the gas tax by 3 cents. It was supposed to go to the crumbling roads and bridges. That's what we always hear. Now, you may have seen recently our candidate for governor was asked what the gas tax was, and she said 10 cents. It wasn't even close. It's 24 cents. They're already collecting 24 cents, and that isn't going towards the roads and bridges. If it was, they would all be paved in gold. Last year's 3 cent increase, one penny basically went towards roads and bridges. Two-thirds of that went back to the T to fund their pensions. You know, you probably read you had employees retiring at the age of 41 with full benefits. You can't sustain that. No business can sustain that. And they didn't want to publish, even after they were forced by the courts to do so, what the pensions that the people were getting. And as Dave mentioned, you know, this affects Rockland is, you have this trickle-down effect that when all the money is kept at the state level, there's nothing left for Chapter 90 money, which is for the roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. And so now the towns have to decide, do we want to float a bond? And we had to do a debt exclusion a couple of years ago to do over 40 roads in the town. Debt exclusions are probably one of the few areas I would ever think about doing an increase, even though I don't like it because we collect excise taxes, almost $2 million a year in our town. That money doesn't go to the roads and bridges. So we need to reform how that money is spent. It needs to be earmarked to the roads and bridges. We can't just take it and throw it into the black hole of state government. As we've seen, state government has increased higher under DeVal Patrick than local aid has, and their budget's gone up higher, and that hasn't gone back to the cities and towns, and it hurts not only just the roads, but public safety and schools.
Okay. Charlie, question for the candidates.
Because, you know, I went to Salem yesterday to see the Turner exhibit at the PEM, and traveling on Route 3, I've been on back roads in Vermont that were better. Anyway, this is Labor Day. Do you think income inequality is a problem in Massachusetts? Would you support, for instance, an increase in the minimum wage? Dave DeCoste.
No, I would not. I think that, number one, for the most part, the minimum wage is an entry-level wage. And most businesses now, there was a study, I believe it was by the Pioneer Institute, might have been the Beacon Hill Institute, but one of the two institutes did a study that showed that in most cases, employers are hiring at above the minimum wage as it is. So the minimum wage is not meant to be a living wage. A minimum wage is meant to be a starting wage that people begin and work their way up from. To expect that, and there's a problem also, the drive for the minimum wage has a lot to do with the prevailing wage for the unions, because of course most of the prevailing wages are tied to the minimum wage. So when you raise the minimum wage, what you're really doing is raising the collective wages of all the union work on all the municipal and state jobs, and that makes everything more expensive to build. We went through that in the town of Norwell, where we have some very knowledgeable people, builders involved with the PBMC, the Permanent Building and Maintenance Committee of the town of Norwell. And we were looking at that. They were remarking about how costly it was to build our police station and what a comparable building would be in the private sector. And it's probably about 60 or 70%. In other words, you're paying a 40% premium at least to build under these current laws. And raising the minimum wage just makes that more costly.
Let me put it slightly differently. Mm-hmm. Do you think the middle class in Massachusetts is in trouble?
Well, the middle class may or may not be in trouble. That I don't know. I can tell you this, that the average working person that I've spoken to is becoming very frustrated with living here. I can tell you that there's a businessman, a very prominent businessman from Braintree, who has remarked, and I remember this, that he had, and he's right, I have never heard anybody talk about starting a business here in Massachusetts. Everyone is trying to leave. Fidelity, relocating jobs outside of Massachusetts. People don't come here to start businesses. They go elsewhere if they can. And we haven't started in the state. We haven't started. Net new businesses are down. They're not up. So this is not the time to, the regulations and the taxes of this state are making it more difficult for the average citizen to raise a family, start and raise a family, and retire.
Lou Valenzuela, middle class and minimum wage, what are your thoughts?
I don't think that has anything to do with the middle class. I'm not sure if anybody thinks they can get a minimum wage job is going to be able to support a family. I talk to people when I go out there. One of the things that cuts across party lines is middle class is getting squeezed, whether you're upper middle class or lower middle class. But to go back to your question, I would be against raising the minimum wage. One of the provisions on the floor last year in tying the gas tax to CPI, they also wanted to tie minimum wage to CPI, so it would go up automatically every year. What that does is that leads to job loss. Also leads to those who might have been working for a company, you know, maybe they were, you know, a couple years in, maybe they would do a raise. They might be making $10 or $12 an hour. Now they won't get a raise, so it hurts them. That could be a mother or whatever, or whoever it might be, and that's going to hurt somebody who's due a raise, because now, you know, the employer only has so much in their budget to spend on wages. So at the end of the day, if you force minimum wage on entry-level positions, these are the jobs, you know, at McDonald's or Burger King, whatever. No offense to those jobs, but the kids at high school, they're not looking to lead a household with these jobs. You know, they're looking to work their way through high school, earn some extra money, maybe through college. As for the middle class, if you think you're going to get a minimum wage job, especially in Massachusetts where the cost of living is as high as it is, and be able to lead a household, there's not enough hours in the week to work, you know. And I think by raising the minimum wage only drives the cost of business up. And as I said before, that drives good jobs out of the state. We want to bring good jobs back. And, you know, I did talk to, you know, I go to, not McDonald's, I go to Dunkin' Donuts on the way home, and a couple of young girls were talking about the minimum wage. I says, wouldn't you rather make $20 an hour? They says, yeah. I says, well, how can we do that? I says, you finish school, you're in high school, yeah, we're going to finish school, we're going to go to Massasoit in the fall. That's how you do it. You get an education, you further yourself. I mean, I do know now it's more difficult, as I've seen firsthand, for kids graduating to get good jobs, but that's how you do it. You don't count on somebody giving you another dollar to an hour. That's not going to make you middle class. So I don't really see the middle class thing having anything to do with the minimum wage thing. It's just, especially in Massachusetts, you know, maybe somewhere in the Midwest where the cost of living's lower, it's just not going to happen here.
Okay,
Kevin,
thank you.
Kevin, one more question, then we're
going to
go to the lightning round.
Yeah, I'll ask one more question. I thought we were going to go to the light. I actually prepared my questions, but I think both of you might be on this.
And I didn't.
Easy now, Charles. The state has changed its educational system to Common Core. What is your thoughts on this method of educating our children? What are your concerns? We'll go with Lou first.
I'm against Common Core. I think we have higher standards in our state than what the Common Core principles are dictating. For instance, I did some research. You know, kids, you have to graduate. You have to have algebra, some trigonometry and calculus, but they don't expect that out of people in Common Core. You only have to have pre-algebra. So we're lowering our standards so we can get more kids through to college. A common complaint you hear a lot of times with kids going into college and the professors are, these kids aren't prepared. I don't think this is going to prepare them any more for college. I am in favor of more choices, charter schools, vouchers. This is how much we're going to spend on a kid. Let the parent decide. As we saw recently in New York City, the teachers' unions were up in arms because these parents wanted more choices. When they have more choices, it cuts across all demographics. Everybody has an equal opportunity. Everybody wants better for their kids. I just see Common Core as government getting more involved, like our health care. Look at what they did with that. What is it that the government gets involved in that they do better?
Okay. Same question to
Dave.
Same
question to you, Dave.
All right. Well, first of all, so let me tell you that I oppose Common Core. The system may or may not help Mississippi go up, but it's going to make Massachusetts go down. And interestingly enough, it's not going to apply to private schools. So the kids going to the wealthier families sending their children to private schools, or the middle class families making general sacrifices to get their kids into private schools may or may not be subject to that. But the public education, that's what they're going to have to deal with. A good site that runs through most of the issues with Common Core and I think really sums up, gives you a good primer of what the problems are, is a site called Liberty Chalkboard. And if you go to Citizens for Decost, there's a link to Liberty Chalkboard. It's an excellent site. And by the way, this is another issue that cuts right across the lines. I can tell you I've had a lot of teachers come up to me and educators, and even at Boston University. I don't think there's very much support for this in the educational community, certainly not amongst the rank and file who are actually teaching.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to our lightning round questions. It's either yes or no or one or two sentences, and then I'm going to let you ask each other one or two lightning round questions as well. Okay, let's start with this. Plymouth County government, keep it or abolish it, yes or no? Dave DeCost, yes or no?
Keep it.
So that's a yes.
Yes.
Okay, yes or no, Lou Valenzuel, Plymouth County government? No. Okay. Kevin Tachi.
Would you be in favor of legalizing the recreational use of marijuana to generate additional revenue for the Commonwealth? Yes or no?
Let's start with Lou.
No.
No.
Dave, no. Okay. Charlie, lightning round question.
If you make it through November, which committee assignment would you prefer?
Start with Dave.
I want to, anyway. Ways and Means and Veterans Affairs.
Okay. Lou, how about you?
I'd say Finance, Ways and Means.
Okay.
Kevin. Would you be in favor of a permanent sales tax free weekend? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Dave?
Yes, but I'd be more.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Can I do the follow up?
Go ahead.
My follow up question to that would be, would you be in favor of a permanent meals tax free week for restaurants?
Yes, but I think both
yes
of us
no.
want to embellish on that. You know.
Yeah, but you can't.
Okay. Yes, can't. No. That's the key of this, yes or no?
Yes, sir. Dave?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Question 3 in the November ballot would repeal a law that allows resort casinos in Massachusetts. How do you plan to vote? And in one or two sentences, explain why. Dave DeCost.
I plan to support that. I just don't think that, given we've already seen right now that the casinos closing in New Jersey. I think that it is, in fact, the social costs outweigh the benefits.
Okay, what about you, Lou?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Question three in the November ballot would repeal a law that allows resort casinos in Massachusetts. How do you plan to vote? And in one or two sentences, explain why.
I would vote to repeal the law. I agree with that. As we've seen, what's happened in Atlantic City, several casinos are closed. More importantly, that would affect...
Now you're going to ask, now you've got a chance, and this is really lightning round. You can ask each other a question, and it has to be a lightning round question, so two sentences tops. Dave DeCoste, your question for Lou Valenzuela, if you have one.
Lou, you've indicated to me your intention to participate in the state pension system, which could mean with as little as 10 years in the legislature, you could immediately retire with a lifelong pension and health care at the state's expense. Knowing the dismal actuarial condition of our pension system, how can you justify doing that?
And you got two sentences.
Oh, two sentences.
Yeah,
huh?
And you can ask him one with two sentences.
You know, I'll be honest with you. When I got into this, I didn't think about doing it to get into a pension. I'm a family guy. I'd probably have to leave the private sector. I don't have,
One more sentence here. It's tough, I know.
No, again, I do believe in pension reform. And I didn't get, if Dave thought I'd get into this to get a pension, that's
just
outrageous.
You're letting your own question for Dave.
Okay. Dave mentions not taking the pension, but
you don't have to ask. It's the opportunity to ask.
No, we saw some issues that came up before, and Dave said it was just kind of putting it out there. I was proactive in asking for the resignation of Olga Roche in DCF, New England Compounding Lab, not accepting legals into the state, so on and so forth. And I was being proactive in that. I would ask Dave now is if you got up there, would you support something as I did, and whether these press releases are supporting the current reps?
Well, I tell you, we had something similar at the Norwell, write a letter to Governor Patrick. Okay. I think it's a waste of time. Those goes in the circular file. Okay. I'd much rather spend my time helping good Republicans get elected.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go to closing statements now. We're going to switch the order that we started in. It can be as short as you want, but no longer than 2 minutes, because remember, we're running just a little bit late. So let's start with you, Lou Valenzuela.
Okay, thank you. I just want to thank everyone for listening tonight, WATD for hosting this forum. I feel that with my accounting background, I am the best candidate in our district. We need representatives who understand the budgeting process. As I mentioned before, we see our politicians spend our money first and figure out how to try to pay for it later through higher taxes, or we face draconian cuts. We're seeing the lack of accountability with the one-party rule. I'm a family man who can relate to the challenges of the middle class. I tell voters while I'm door knocking that I'm an accountant, not a politician, so don't hold that against me. I'm not looking to make a career out of this. I'm 54 years old. I've been working in the private sector for 30 years. I'm not getting this, taking the job just to get some of the benefits. I also have the endorsements of Representatives Sean O'Connell and Jeff Dale and other state reps and GOP party leaders. If you want more information, you can check me out on my website, louvalenzuela.net, on Facebook or by email. I would be honored to have your support in the primary next Tuesday, September 9th. Please remind your friends, neighbors, co-workers, and family members to vote. Thank you and good night.
Thank you very much. That was Lou Valenzuela's closing statement. Dave DeCoste, your closing statement.
Right, first of all, again, Christine, Charles, Kevin, thank you for sponsoring this, and thank you for WATD for sponsoring it. Tonight, I'm asking the voters of the 5th Plymouth District to elect me, Dave DeCoste, to be an extra representative. As someone who was brought up here, attended the school system, and as a graduate of Norwell and a family who's been in the town of Norwell for over four decades, I have an appreciation for his history and long-term commitment to town's well-being. I'm a graduate of Northeastern University with degrees in accounting and finance. And along with that, I teach financial economics at Boston University, where I also have a graduate degree in that subject. I have military service spanning 29 years, both as enlisted man and officer, and that gives me a unique background to understand the challenges faced by veterans, young and old. I currently own and operate several real estate trusts, and I am involved in the management of several others. I'm the only candidate in this race who has owned and run a business, and as a member of the National Federation of Independent Businessmen, I will act actively work to promote, protect the right of everyone in business to own, operate, and grow their businesses with a minimum of interference from state government. I entered the race for representative because I am committed to Massachusetts and I am concerned with the fiscal and operational mismanagement I see. We are in a time of increasingly limited resources and a tough economy that is stressing the economies of both younger families and seniors. If elected, I will stand with those individuals who are paying taxes, working hard, and who expect to live in a state where those values are rewarded. My general philosophy of government is that local government generally does things best because it is closer to the people. And I see you looking at me and telling me to close, so I would just ask you to take a look at citizensfordecoast.com and vote for Dave DeCoste in 5th Plymouth District on November 9th.
Thank you very much. That was Dave DeCoste. You've heard Lou Valenzuela, too, the Republican candidates of 5th Plymouth District, Hanover, Norwell, and Rockland. Asking questions tonight, Kevin Tonchi, host of Monday Night Talk, Charles Mathewson. You can hear this in its entirety on our website, 959watd.com, and selected cuts tomorrow morning. And, of course, stay tuned to WATD for complete election coverage. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. We've got more of Monday Night Talk straight ahead right here on 959WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tonchi, on 95.9 WATD.